All right, so you've got the list of questions that we sent you from Lost Coast Outpost readers, and you have very graciously, thank you very much, agreed to take our questions and see what you have to say, yeah? So I've got a couple of categories of questions here. I sort of categorized them, the best questions from our readers, and I put them under a couple of different headings. And the first one is about politics generally, and there's basically only one question here, and that is, at the last NCRA meeting, why did Mike Newman vote in your place, and why did he vote differently than you did at the previous meeting? Now, I think the questioner here is not talking about the NCRA, but the HCOG Mayor's City Selection Committee, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. You know, that was a difficult situation for me. At the initial meeting, you know, I voted for Doug Strell initially, and when it was a tie vote, I thought about it, and I've had dealings with Alex Stillman in the past, and I thought she would be do a good job over there at the NCRA, so I changed my vote and voted for her. After that meeting, I took a lot of grief from some of the rail advocates, and individual council members also contacted me individually and expressed their, disappointment with my vote. And it was clear to me that the majority of the council wanted someone other than Alex Stillman appointed to the NCRA board. So I decided at that point then that you know, I supported Alex, and I didn't feel that I could go to the next meeting after things kind of went downhill and we were threatened with a lawsuit and there was going to be a second vote. I decided that it wouldn't be best for me to go to the meeting and vote for Alex, which is not what the council wanted. So I just decided to send Mike as mayor pro tem because he represented what the council wanted on the NCRA board. And that's what happened. There was no behind the rooms or backroom deals or violation of the Brown Act. It was just a decision that I made based on what I felt was the council's desire. So,
I guess someone might say that a follow up. Well, it's your decision. You're an elected mayor. You don't. You're not. It's a separate office, unlike in most cities in the city of Eureka. Yeah. And it's your seat. The citizens elected you. Like, why did you feel that your vote or your opinion?
Well, yeah, and that's true. But you know, I have to work with the councils, and I didn't feel this was an issue that I wanted to fall on my sword over. You know, Doug is going to probably do a fine job. Alex would have done a fine job, but the council felt differently regarding that. And I have to work with the council, and the community is pretty divided over this issue. So I don't, you know, I felt that I should go with what I felt the council wanted. So.
Okay, so then there's a couple more questions here under the heading of city infrastructure or blight. Someone writes, I heard that there were past rumblings about transforming Broadway with a center median replete with trees and other vegetation. Is there still a plan to redesign this eyesore so that it is so heavily traveled by incorporating previous landscapes to calm traffic, reduce stormwater runoff, improve air quality, shade paved surfaces, encourage walking, etc. The current design is obviously in need of help. I've heard about this too, about Broadway, yeah. Efforts to transform Broadway. What's going on there?
Right, and this question, and I think couple other ones here relate to Broadway and 4th and 5th, and Broadway and 4th and 5th are something that that's a high state highway. Caltrans has jurisdiction over that, and what happens on those highways or what improvements are made or what is done has to be gone through with Caltrans, and we've been working with them to come up with some plans on how to change Broadway, how to change 4th and 5th, and to make it more, amenable to the city and reduce accidents and that sort of thing. So it's a work in progress, and I would encourage people that have ideas about that to contact their council members, because we'll be having meetings here in the coming year as to what to do with Broadway and 4th and 5th, how to improve them. I think we're stuck with this highway through town for probably the rest of our foreseeable lives. So, we got to do our best to try to make it something we can live with. So.
So it's still in the early stages, in other words.
It's in the very early stages. I think the first thing we're doing right now is we're going to, we've got funds available to develop some kind of an entrance into Eureka from the north and south, so that people coming to Eureka from either north or south know that when they're entering Eureka, and it'll be, you know, something attractive, something that that catches people's attention and lets them know that they're now entering Eureka, and encourage them to slow down and enjoy the view once we improve it.
Yeah. I mean, often, like when I have people come in, sometimes I tell people from out of town to take the Elk River Road way in, just because then you drive past the golf course there, you drive past 8th Street, a nice neighborhood, and sort of avoid the sometimes shocking first impression that people driving from the south get when coming into Eureka.
Yeah, I would agree, and it's something on our definitely on our radar, and we're going to be working with Caltrans to try to do something about that, especially probably starting with Broadway, and then we'll move around the corner to 4th and 5th. So,
all right. Well, another person asks, then, sort of along the same lines. I heard that the city of Eureka is going to be working on a new business license fee structure for local motels, hotels, based on the amount of times that police are called to a location. Can you tell us more about what the city is planning on doing to clean up our motel blight problem?
Our code enforcement people and planning department has developed a proposed ordinance that would basically penalize hotels and motels for not keeping up their properties and for causing the police department grief and the fire department grief regarding the incidents that occur at those different locations. And it's a graduated penalty fee structure if they don't comply and reduce their amount of problems they're having. It'll cost them, and I think hitting them in the pocketbook is one of the ways we can get these people to try to clean up these properties and make it not such a problem for us.
That's something.
The ordinance hasn't come to the council yet. Some of the motel owners that actually have good properties have some concerns about it. And so we've got to work with them so that we don't overly penalize people that are actually keeping up their properties and doing a good job. So that is also a work in progress, but I think you'll see that within the next 6 months come to the council and start to be enforced.
That is within the city's power then to impose. That is within the city's power to impose additional fees on businesses for police calls to those businesses.
It is. It is. It can be. It'll be drafted as an ordinance, and they'll have to comply with it.
There was that case just yesterday, I'm sure you know, about the, you know, not uncommon cases being Eureka Police Department being called to motels on 4th and 5th there at the north end of town or down on Broadway for, you know, it seems like a lot of drug operations working out of some of these motels, which are, you know, not motels in the classic sense, but sort of like, you know, rent by the week kind of places.
Yeah, and that's what ordinance is meant to address. Mm-hmm. Some of the landlords of these properties would just take the initiative on their own, but it appears that they're going to need some prodding from the city before they do anything.
Does that affect, would that sort of thing affect the amount of affordable housing stock in the city of Eureka?
Well, it will, probably. You know, one of the results of an ordinance like this sometimes is you could end up with shutting down of a motel, which reduce the amount of affordable housing available to people. So it's something we need to consider when we enforce the ordinance. It's kind of a stick and to try to force these people to clean up the properties. And I think that, we're willing to work with them and try to do what we can to help them out. But they've got to come and meet us to help us reduce the blight that we see along Broadway.
We have another reader here who asks, as a lifelong citizen, what on earth can be done about hiring a dedicated person or persons to actually keep up and take care of this town, i.e. weed out gutters, bushes and hedges trimmed properly around street signs, fresh flags each year downtown and in Henderson Center, fresh paint and repair fresh flags each year downtown and in Henderson Center, fresh paint and repair down at the Wharfinger building. I'm tired of seeing the simplest things go undone by our city staff and maintenance divisions. It might not seem much to most people, but the common blight of such things really makes our city ugly to visitors and citizens alike. It's baffling to me how the city can employ 100 people, but these simple tasks can't get done each day.
Yeah, well, you know, that question hits at the fact that, you know, it's little things that people notice sometimes. You know, I took a drive around a couple days ago, just at different areas of town, some of what was mentioned here, and actually, things are in pretty good shape right now. I don't know what he's talking about regarding the Wharfinger building. It looks pretty good. And, you know, some of our council members have actually been proactive regarding this. I know that Councilman Marion Brady, with some friends, went over to that intersection at Myrtle and Fifth, where that horse structure work is at, and they spent a lot of time weeding and cleaning out that whole area. Our park staff is overwhelmed. I mean, you know, when we have to cut back budgets, you know, a lot of times they're the ones that are affected. And we're trying to keep our parks in good shape so people can use them. And there's a lot of buildings, city buildings that have to be maintained, and there's just not enough people to do it. So in regards to weeds in the gutter, bushes and hedges on private property, you know, we're trying to encourage people to take care of their own. And if everybody would go out and help in their own properties, things would look a lot better around the city. And but we're trying to address these things. And what I would encourage people to do is, if they see areas that are tending to get out of hand, let us know, and we'll let the council members or myself know, and we'll get somebody on it as soon as we can.
But yeah, looks like you might go out there and weed it yourself, following Council Member Brady's example. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and we're not above grabbing a couple people ourselves and just going out and doing it ourselves. but if it can be brought to our attention, we will certainly address it as soon as we can.
So another person asks, in the 101 corridor between Eureka and Arcata, the beautiful view of the bay is obscured by all of those awful billboards. There has been talk in the past of those things being removed, and yet they're still there. I believe the ability to restrict them may have depended on who owned the particular piece of land, but I don't quite recall. I've considered boycotting the businesses that advertise there, but I'm not sure if it would help. Any suggestions, updates, etc.?
Well, the billboards, are mostly, they're all on private property. There's not a lot the city can do. Not very many of them are actually in the city limits. Most of those are in the county, but there's not a lot we can do regarding billboards on private property that are already existing. As a matter of fact, I think it was maybe 10 years ago, there was a lawsuit brought over, I think it was Arcata, that was trying to remove billboards, or trying to say that once a billboard fell down or something like that, that they couldn't replace it. And a lawsuit was brought. And the court decided in the favor of these advertising people that own these billboards.
So yeah, I remember that, yeah.
It's a difficult situation. I know a lot of people don't like them. You know, this is probably politically incorrect to say, but I don't see it as a big blight. I mean, we don't have an excessive amount of billboards. If you want to see excessive amount of billboards, go to L.A. or San Francisco or something like that. But, you know, we're fortunate here that we don't have any more than we do, and I don't think they unduly obstruct our views of our bay.
You say many of them are on private property, but I believe at least some of them, or maybe more than some of them there along the bay, are on North Coast Railroad Authority property.
That's
to bring it
right.
Back.
And, you know, people that object to that should, you know, contact North Coast Railroad Authority and let them lodge their objections.
Okay, so I have a couple more questions here under the heading of public safety. What is the history behind the 4th and 5th Street crosswalks across three lanes of traffic with no blinking lights or signs? In a 35-mile-per-hour zone, clearly the 101 through Eureka layout will have to change someday, and I would like to know about the options and plans. And along those same lines, with all the vehicle versus pedestrian accidents lately, is there anything being looked into as far as blinking crosswalks and or safer ways to protect people from cars and or people driving in the Eureka area?
Yeah, again, this is a Caltrans issue that we have to deal with Caltrans regarding these crosswalks and that sort of thing. And we have found that the blinking lights in the street are very effective in getting motorist attention, and we're trying to move forward with installing those kind of lights in our 4th and 5th Street. But again, we have to work with Caltrans. We have to find funding to do it. But it's on the radar. We found that it's very effective to do that, and we're going to try and do it as many places as we can where we have problems, especially 4th and 5th. I think it would be very advantageous to have something like that.
Well, not all of it is Caltrans, though. I suppose there have been a number, you know, a pretty shocking number of fatal or near fatal pedestrian versus vehicle accidents in the city of Eureka this year. Yeah.
There has, and you know, I'm just astounded at the fact that we have so many accidents. We rank way up there in the per capita number of accidents per capita, and you know, it's
why is that? Do you know?
Right, people. You know, I don't know. It's been looked at, but you know, basically, people are in too much of a hurry, and they drive with their. I can't say that, but they drive crazy. And if people would just pay more attention to their driving and be more cognizant of what's around them, I think we could do a lot to reduce our traffic problems.
Well, what about the blinking lights, say, on you know, H or I streets or on Harrison, things like that?
Yeah, no, I'm fully for it. I mean, it's a great way to get people's attention. And, I like the... As you come into Fortuna, there you have a stop sign that has those blinking lights on it, which really gets your attention. So that's a great way to do things, and I think we're going to move forward as soon as we have funds to try to do that as many places as we can.
Where might funds come from?
Well, they come from gas tax funds. They come from grants and different money that we can kick loose from the general fund to try to get this done. I meant to try to find out what it costs to install something like that and maintain them, but I didn't get a chance to find out. So okay. I'll continue to work on that.
Okay. Frank, a question here about the new Eureka police chief, something that I know is close to your heart. You served as a Eureka police officer for many, many years and have worked in law enforcement all your life. Yeah. Yeah, this person asks, I'd like to ask Frank why the city would consider hiring Michael Johnson as the new police chief. Even if he is the best qualified candidate, I think the backlash from the general public due to his past history as a Eureka police officer would make it very questionable hire, one that would not be popular and would create a lot of controversy. If Mr. Johnson is hired, there will continue to be a major mistrust of the police department by the citizens of Eureka. Now, I think a lot of that refers to, or at least some of it anyway, to the Sherry Lynn Moore incident, which I know you're intimately familiar with. I attended the coroner's inquest that you conducted while you were a coroner in Humboldt County. I think it continues to be a sort of open wound within people's thoughts and about the Eureka Police Department. And Michael Johnson, of course, one of the officers involved in that. The city has just hired him as its new police chief. But what are your thoughts there?
Well, my thoughts are that the selection of a chief for the city of Eureka is an ongoing process. It's been a long process, and we've interviewed and examined a lot of people. Mike Johnson was one of the people that rose to the top. He's done a good job in the two cities that he's served as police chief. But having said that, you got to realize that it's still an ongoing process, and I would encourage the public just to hold on and see what happens.
How do you mean it's ongoing?
Well, there's been no decision as to who we're going to hire yet. So I know that he is one of the top candidates, and we're conducting background investigations on him and taking. As much information about him as possible, but there's been no final decision. you know, that's one of the most important decisions that the new city managers has to make here. And although the council and myself have input, it's really the city manager's decision on who we hire. And one of the things I'd like to say, you know, I've heard from maybe half a dozen people regarding specifically Mike Johnson, and some of those people don't even live in Eureka. And this process, or the hiring of whoever we hire, is not going to be driven by a half a dozen people that probably will not be happy no matter who we pick. It'll be driven by the manager's decision to hire the best person he thinks is going to be do the best job for the police department and our community. So I think we're going to end up with a good police chief. I can just tell people that there's been no final decision made as to who we're going to hire. But who we do end up with eventually, we'll do a good job because he's been pretty thoroughly investigated and vetted as far as what he can do for the city of Eureka.
I guess some people, I mean, I don't know if I'm just quoting the half a dozen people that you don't want to like determine city policy on their own, which is, of course, fair enough. You know, I guess there's still, you know, there was that terrible year, you remember it, that the Eureka Police Department had where, you know, I think 4 or 5 officer-involved shootings, fatalities, one of them, you know, a mentally ill woman, one of them a 16-year-old boy, that sort of, I think, backlash that came from the citizens at that time led to the idea that, well, you know, we need to sort of reform the Eureka Police Department. The city went through, hired Gar Nielsen. That didn't work out for reasons that are still not quite clear to the public. But I think, you know, if they're, you know, the 5 or 6 people or whoever they represent might say, well, you know, the Eureka Police Department still, there's maybe a struggle there between what you might think of as, you know, the old guard at the Eureka PD and, you know, some fresh ideas maybe from outside in modern, you know, maybe more modern, updated style of law enforcement. So I think that, you know, to again channel the malcontents or the non-Eureka residents, I'm not sure, but you know, they would say that Eureka PD maybe still has problems. Maybe we need someone to come in from the outside.
Well, I know that's one line of thinking, but
it's not one you agree with, then?
Not necessarily. You know, when the city manager asked me about my opinions, you know, one of the first things I said is we need to hire somebody local.
Why is that?
We need somebody that knows this community and knows our problems we're having with crime in this community, that knows the police department, that can work with the police department. You know, I've been involved in the hiring of 2 police chiefs that were from out of the area, that didn't know the department, didn't know the community, and both times we had problems. But when we hire somebody that knows the department, like, for instance, Millsap or Douglas, they were people that really, you know, were involved with the community and know the community, I think. And Shipley, I wish we could find another Chief Shipley, but... I think somebody local is somebody is what we need.
Another reader asks here, what's up with the gunshots I hear every night? I can't tell where they're coming from or even whether they are inside or outside city limits. Poachers chasing the raccoons away? Crime? It's not fireworks all the time. I can't call the police since I can't tell where the shots are coming from. I know you can hear it too. You live 2 blocks from me.
I don't know how to address that. He's correct. I hear those every once in a while. I live here in the south end of town, and I do hear those gunshots every once in a while. But, you know, there's a single shot in the night, you know, unless somebody is being assaulted or somebody reports it coming from their backyard, there's not much we can do about it. I mean, it's not something that's caused a big problem other than maybe wake us up once in a while. I've been particularly interested in that question last week or so since I saw it, and I haven't heard anything lately. But
you have in the past.
Oh yeah, I have in the past. Every once in a while, at night, in the middle of the night, you hear these what obviously are gunshots coming from the Greenbelt area is either to the east or south of us. And I don't know whether it's a cutting area or a golf course area or what. But
Are there not city ordinances against firearm usage in
Clearly, yeah. You can't be discharging firearms in the city limits of Eureka. How do you deal with a situation like that? You know, you hear a gunshot at 2 in the morning, you call the police. I mean, they're out patrolling. If it's related to some kind of crime, innocence, and I'm sure they'll be involved in it, there's no way to track down something like that. So,
it's causing
a specific problem. There's nothing really we can do about it.
It is a crime, isn't it? Then, if there are city ordinances,
it's a crime. Yeah, but there's really nothing you can do about it.
Just because we don't have the resources. I wonder, Eureka police are out patrolling, waiting for crime. Firing a gun on the city limits is a crime.
But somebody fires off a rifle in the Greenbelt area. What are we going to do? Mount a search for that person who's probably disappeared into his house by the time the police arrive? I mean, it's just unless it's causing a specific problem or some kind of related crime, there's really nothing we can do about it.
I'd like to move on to the section I have here called economic development. Someone says, is it possible to offer some sort of economic incentive or tax relief to new businesses who decide to build on the 101 corridor? That is the part most travelers see, and right now there is not much reason to stop on the corridor.
Yeah, there is. We have most of the downtown. Of course, we've lost redevelopment, which was a real tool to help us in that area. But we still have all of the 101 corridor, which is in the enterprise zone. And as part of the enterprise zone, we can offer tax incentives to businesses for the number of people that they hire. And I know our planning department has really been on top of that and trying to notify businesses and potential businesses that enterprise zone exists and that it can be advantageous to them to locate in that area. So it's an active thing that they try to do. So unfortunately, the governor would also like to get rid of the enterprise zones, just like he did redevelopment, which is a real unfortunate thing for cities like Eureka who benefit from that quite a bit.
What sort of benefits do you get if you locate a new business in an enterprise zone?
You get tax incentives. You get reduced tax incentives for the number of employees being hired. For instance, the new brewery that they're building on the south end of town, they're in the enterprise zone, and they'll for a number of, they get so much tax relief per employee that they hire in that business. So it's a real advantage to businesses if they can hire and locate in that area in the enterprise zones.
Another person asks, what is happening with that Marina Center development? Forever it was in the daily news, and now there is no news at all.
Oh, the Marina Center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I heard that that Randy Gans was on Ken's, and I don't know whether he addressed that issue or not a couple days ago or not. I haven't had a chance to go to their website and listen to what he had to say. But as far as I know, their Security National still wants to build the Marina Center. However, they've got two big hurdles to overcome, and one is financial. They've ran into some hard times financially. And the other big problem they have is their dispute with the Coastal Commission over wetlands and cleanup of the property. And so until those two issues are resolved, I don't think anything's going to happen down there. We'll encourage them to move forward with it, and I think they still want to move forward with it, but they've got those two big issues looming out there that they have to resolve before something can happen.
Of course, the economic climate nationally has changed a great deal since this first was floated almost 10 years ago now. The idea was the Home Depot would come in. I don't know where Home Depot's at now. It's a completely different world than it was 10 years ago when people were first talking about it, isn't it?
Yeah. In my conversation with Randy Gans, uh, he's, he has told me that Home Depot still wants to locate there. They still want to build the Marine Center, but it's just those two issues that they have to deal with and resolve before they can move forward. So
this wasn't on our list, Frank, but since you talked about Security National and falling on hard times, what do you hear about the Arkley Center? I mean, when it was first announced, I think they said, well, we're going to close for a while for renovation. I think people cast a sort of skeptical eye on that and didn't expect it to open again anytime soon. Do you hear anything in that?
I haven't heard anything. Again, I think that's a result of their financial difficulties that they're having. It costs a lot to keep that building operating and maintained. So I think they...
At the time, of course, they said it was just because some renovations needed to be done.
Well, that could be. I don't know. I haven't had any conversations with them regarding that. It's a real asset for the city of Eureka, so I'm hoping that they can... they can keep it open eventually, or reopen it, keep it open. It's something that's been really useful for us, attracting people and events and that sort of thing. So,
another reader asks, is there anything in the works to update Eureka's local coastal plan? Maybe the others around Humboldt Bay as well. They seem pretty out of date.
Yeah, we are just in the process of starting our general plan update. And hopefully it won't take 12 years like it took with the county, but part of our updating of our coastal plan will be part of that general plan update. We'll be looking at our local coastal plan and what we can do with it and how we can change it. So that process is just beginning. I think it'll start to ramp up quite a bit next year and going, forward in 2014, I think you're going to see a lot of work on updating our general plan, which includes the updating of the local coastal plan too.
Of course,
fortunate that we're able to have that local coastal plan approved, because it allows us to do a lot of things without having to constantly go back to the Coastal Commission regarding projects and things that are going on. So. It just needs some updating, some tweaking, and I think that'll all happen starting next year.
Of course, the Coastal Commission will have to sign off on the local coastal plan,
That's
update?
That's correct, yeah.
And do you have any indication that the Coastal Commission's direction is changing, that they are that they will be amenable to new ideas about the local coastal plan, or is there any? Do you have any idea about that right now?
The city of Eureka has a pretty good working relationship with the Coastal Commission right now, and I think that'll continue. I think we're sensitive to what they want, and they're sensitive to what we want, and I think things will go fine as regarding changing of the coastal plan and that sort of thing. It's unfortunate that some local businesses haven't had such a relationship with the Coastal Commission, but actually our relationship has been pretty good. Our staff is in pretty much constant contact with the staff of the Coastal Commission on things that are going on around Eureka, and they've been pretty reasonable with helping us out, working through the process.
Would a local coastal plan update include the changes in zoning to the Marina Center property that voters voted on a couple years ago?
Well, the zoning part has already been changed. The zoning is not really an issue with the Marina Center. What the issue is the wetlands. What is wetlands and what isn't wetlands, and how much has to be kept as wetlands, and how much cleanup needs to be done regarding past pollution there at that site, and they have a dispute with the Coastal Commission over what needs to be done, and they feel one way, the Coastal Commission feels a different way, and so that's a whole different situation.
Another reader asks here, what are Eureka's historical, cultural, and geographical assets, and how are they being incorporated into city planning?
Oh, boy. Our historical assets are certainly our architecture, the buildings, the old buildings that we've been able to keep here, our our Native American culture that we've had, the arts, of course, geographically, our bay is, of course, the greatest asset that we have. And you know, we take all of those things into consideration whenever there's a development or when there's, for instance, when we have something like the old Town Bar and Grill, the Healy Building, that was going to be torn down, and we fortunately were able to, Kirk Kramer was able to come in and save that building. So, you know, the more that we can encourage private developers to do that kind of thing, the better off we are, so...
You speak about the bay, and it reminds me that there for so long there. I mean, there's been stagnation on the Eureka waterfront. You know, the Fisherman's Terminal building seems stalled out at the moment. That large bit of property between F Street Plaza and the Fisherman's Terminal on the bay, it's been leased forever, and nothing has happened to it. What's happening with the Fisherman's Terminal and those spots?
Well. And that lack of development down there is really, again, it goes right back to the financial problems that we've had in the last 4 or 5 years within not only locally but nationally. People are reluctant to make investments in, when the financial situation is so shaky. Now, we've had the property between the Fisherman's Terminal and over the that whole vacant lot area there is tied up in a development agreement with John Ash and Dolores Valentini, who want to build a multi-story hotel right there on the waterfront, and they're trying to work through that process, which has been very difficult, mainly because of the financial situation and whether or not it pencils out for them.
Well, but I mean they held that lease back in the boom years as well, no?
Yeah, this process has gone on for 15, 16 years, and of course they've changed. It's morphed over the years and changed, and there's lawsuits and so it's really hampered their ability to move forward. If they had been able to move forward 15, 16 years ago, we'd probably have a pretty vibrant waterfront down there right now, but they were stalled with a lawsuit and then the economic downturn, and so it's a situation that's really been tough for us. And regarding the Fisherman's Building, Terminal Building, and what's really hurt us there is the taking away and redevelopment, because we had the ability to help businesses, provide the incentive to move forward. And with the economic downturn and the removal of wealth out of redevelopment, it's really hurt us down there. So,
but the city got a big pot of ARRA funds, the stimulus funds to finish that project, and I guess you ran out of cash.
We did. We got the money to finish it. What's lacking there is. One of the things we wanted to do was put a cafe, a restaurant right there on the waterfront, and we had planned to do that with redevelopment money, but that was taken away right when we were just getting ready to finish that project. So that remains a work in progress.
Well, I didn't mean to step on the reader's questions here. She asked about the historical, cultural, and geographic assets, and you listed them, but she also wants to know, I'm not quite sure, how they are being incorporated into city planning.
Well, they're being incorporated through the CEQA process. Any time we make any kind of development down there or do any development down there, all of those assets have to be taken into account. And so it's addressed through the CEQA process. And our planning department is pretty proactive in trying to address all those issues and make sure that they're considered when we do developments along the waterfront.
Sure, but broadly, I'd say, are those assets that the planning department is looking to, preserve, promote, actively market? Well, I don't know that the city planning department is involved in marketing, but recognize those things that the city planning department or the council recognizes as active contributors to, the general good and the economy of the city, I suppose.
They are, and we have boards and commissions that advise not only the city council but city staff regarding that. The Design Review Commission, the Historic Preservation Commission, planning commission, all of those agencies help us identify and take those assets into consideration when we're making decisions on development.
Well, Frank Yeager, I have one more question here. It's under the what I categorized as personal. The reader asks, as a Eureka resident, I would like to know if it is true that your brother was recently arrested for possession of a large quantity of marijuana traveling in Oklahoma. With your other brother being a high-ranking local CHP officer, isn't this a dangerous conflict of interest? Are you and your law enforcement brother complacent in your potentially drug-trafficking brother's activities? I think that we can rephrase that as your brother was arrested for marijuana. You and your other brother have been longtime law enforcement employees. What happened there?
Well, I love my brother, but neither I nor my CHP brother or the family really have control over what he's decided to do with his life. It's been kind of a tough situation for us when we have family gatherings with our law enforcement background and knowing that he's engaged in that kind of activity. But the real tragedy in this whole situation is his teenage son who is up in the Bridgeville-Brockford area, and now he's going to be without his father for an extended period of time. So, like I say, I love my brother, but I don't condone anything that he's doing or has done, and neither does my other brother, who's a CHP captain.
Your family, born and raised, your generation anyway, Humboldt County, yeah?
Yes, we're all born and raised here, and everybody's doing well, except for my brother, Paul.
Yeah, I think it's not that unusual or surprising of a Humboldt County story.
It's not. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, had that occurred in California, he'd probably be getting probation or something. But in Oklahoma, it's a major crime. So he's...
Do I remember you have relatives out that way, Oklahoma?
We're basically our family... is from Kansas, so that's where we have quite a bit of family still in the Kansas area.
But there's no, I guess, just to reiterate, there's no other member of your family or extended family involved in this case.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Not at all. In fact, we weren't even aware that he was even doing that sort of thing.
Uh huh.
Well, we knew he was a farmer, but he's pretty much been a small time operator up in the Bridgeville, Blocksburg area, and for quite some time actually. And then I think he got greedy, unfortunately, and it's not something that's condoned in the Midwest.
Yeah, and again, but not an atypical Humboldt County story, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, Frank Yeager, I want to thank you very much for taking the time. You've been very generous here, and I hope that this wasn't too painful.
Okay, I'll look forward to some of the other mayors and see our other political figures and see what kind of questions come up for them.
Who do you recommend?
I think maybe Arcata, Board of Supervisors, people like that.
Yes, Shane Brinton owes me a phone call.
What's that?
I said Shane Brinton owes me a phone call.
All right.
I was going after him next, but he's out of touch. Well, thanks again, Frank.
Okay.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.